symptoms. And nothing gets you closer to zero than Nasacort. Because unlike antihistamines that stop only one cause of your allergy symptoms, Nasacort stops more. And stopping more gets you closer to zero. For 24-hour relief of your worst nasal allergy symptoms, including congestion, choose Nasacort. It stops more of what makes you miserable. Use as directed.
A U.S. diplomat has been expelled from New Zealand. Correspondent Chris Barnes has the story.
Police in New Zealand say the U.S. Embassy employee was involved in an incident on March 12th near Wellington. The incident left the attaché with a broken nose and a black eye. Officials in Washington decided not to waive the employee's diplomatic immunity. The New Zealand Herald reporting the attaché has since left the country. I'm Chris Barnes.
Well, it's one of every parent's worst nightmares, and fortunately in this case, it was thwarted. An attempted kidnapping of a child in San Diego. Here's Jason Campidonia.
The attempted kidnapping happened Saturday at the Little League ball fields in Escondido. Investigators say a man asked a young child to get into the cab of a white truck on Bear Valley Parkway. Witnesses say the guy offered the boy a slice of cake, but the boy refused and then ran to his mother nearby. Police told coaches and parents several hours later. The man is believed to be in his 60s, but investigators say they don't have a clear description of the suspect. Jason Campidonia, San Diego.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is continuing his trip throughout Asia. He met with Chinese leaders to pave the way for a meeting between President Trump and the Chinese president.
It is important that the leaders of our two countries engage in further dialogue to develop a common understanding that will guide our relationship for the next half century.
Get more news online at westernjournalism.com. This is USA Radio News.
Weather this afternoon, mostly sunny with a high near 50, northwest wind around 7 miles per hour. Tonight, a slight chance of rain after midnight, mostly cloudy with a low around 33. Calm wind becoming west around 5 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 55. Northwest wind 3 to 8 miles per hour. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 31. Northwest wind around 6 miles per hour. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 38. Northwest wind 9 to 17 miles per hour. And Wednesday night, mostly clear with a low around 17.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness,
And there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We work out of our houses. And as I said before, someone once told me the commute when you work out of your house from your kitchen to the family room is quite good. And I have to agree with them. What we try to do is we try to help people who have a mental health issue. Now, they may have someone in their family who have a mental health issue, or it may be someone they know. It doesn't have to be blood. It could be somebody they work with or a next-door neighbor. And what we do is we try to help them through various means. One of them is a 12-week course, which is called Family to Family. It's given once a week for 12 consecutive weeks, and they talk about medication, side effects, what to say, what not to say in a crisis situation, or what to do and what not to do in a crisis situation also. What we try to do is get the person taking the course to better understand what the person with the illness is going through and what it feels like. We also have a support group, once a month, every third Thursday of the month at 52 East Main Street, and it's from 7 to 8:30 or 9, depending on how well people talk. And it's all confidential, and everything we do is free. There is no charge for anything. And if you need some more information or you would like some information about it, you can give us a call. It's 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't have someone man the phone 24 hours a day, but we do check it at least twice a day, so we promise you we will get back to you. And right now, I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Tracy Ivey, and she can introduce our guest and all that happy stuff.
Thanks, Larry. Today, we're very pleased to have Beverly Stoskis, who is a licensed professional counselor who currently works as an intensive in-home counselor in Hunterdon and Warren counties. She was formerly a school counselor in Alexandria Township Schools in Hunterdon County, where she worked as a 504 coordinator and is an anti-bullying specialist. Beverly, welcome.
Welcome.
Good to have you here. Let's talk about your work now and who it helps.
Okay. I've been in the field of counseling for many years. In addition to working in Alexandria schools, I also worked at various high schools in the state and then overseas in Germany. I got my master's when I was overseas. At that time, I worked closely with children and families. So my work as an intensive in-home counselor actually began in 2009 when I sought part-time employment with an agency in, currently it's in Monmouth County, and I also work with an agency here in Phillipsburg. What I do is I provide in-home services to children ages 3 to up to 21 years old if they have some additional disabilities. So my agency will receive a case for a child. Sometimes it is for a whole family in terms of family therapy, but generally we don't say client anymore, we say our youth is in need, whether it be a short-term stabilization because of certain symptoms, or it could be a little bit more long-term. And of course, at that point, I would want to try to stabilize and then refer to other services. So, for example, if I'm given a case, I will go out to the home. And again, my work has been in homes. Sometimes I may go visit a school, but predominantly my focus is with the family in the home setting.
Okay, so Beverly, let's talk a little bit when you say family with needs. We are talking physical as well as mental disabilities, correct? Like you told me, sometimes the children just won't go to school.
Okay, so our children, there might be a school avoidance, there might be good functioning, going to school, but having anxiety, having some needs through other agencies, for example, Department of Children Family, Department of Children and Families, Department of Children and Families Protection Agency. They may request a family to seek services for their children, maybe through parenting support as well, helping them understand the developmental stages of children and helping them develop a roles at home and helping them to sometimes gain control in the home.
So the children could be traumatized mentally, or if the child, let's say they broke their leg and they're in traction or they can't go to school for a month, is that something else that you would be sent over for?
That wouldn't necessarily be something I'd be sent for.
Oh.
Predominantly it's mental health aspect.
I got it. Okay. So, Larry, you can jump in at any time if you have any questions. Let's talk about it. I know a typical home visit, obviously, there are many different stages. Let's talk, I believe you said, how many weeks are you usually contracted to go? About 6 weeks or so?
The way the program works in New Jersey is part of the children's system of care.
Mm-hmm.
And if I call through a mobile response and stabilization services, I would generally be offered an 8-week opportunity to meet with my child or youth for up to 2.5 hours a week.
Okay.
And during that time, the first part, there is an intake, and I would, I'd be given a referral and I would be giving information about what the need is. But then I would go out and I would look to develop an intake and a treatment plan or a plan of care. Also during that time, this is a voluntary program. So I have to follow the HIPAA regulations and confidentiality and respect and dignity to my family as if I were doing services in an outpatient setting. I think that's most important, that families do receive services in a least restrictive environment and that they are treated with respect and dignity. And it's an honor to go into someone's home. I'm there to support them. I'm not there to make judgments. I'm there to help them work what I call we partner together. We call this a wraparound approach. And if I am working with the mobile response, there is a care manager who will contact me from time to time during that 8-week period, and they will ask me how things are going. They will also contact the family and check in with them as to if their needs are being met, and we will certainly problem solve and look for other opportunities if we need opportunities for the family or the youth. Many times I will come in, and again, if I'm working, as I said, I've had children as young as 3 years old all the way up to 21. An example of a child who might be three, maybe they were taking out of their home through the Child Protection Agency, and when they were placed in foster care or with a resource family, there might be a consideration of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So, or there might be other situations that might involve them being traumatized or just adjusting. So I will come out and I will work, and I also like to say we are strength-based. We look at the strengths. When I go out, when I meet with my families, I assess, do we have a high school diploma? Are we gainfully employed? Are there connections to a church or some kind of a community service? Are the families aware of support groups such as NAMI? I think I will just again say NAMI because I do refer my families to NAMI. I go on the website myself, and I really feel, again, that might be a barrier for them when they first come out to services and they're first exposed. Sometimes if it is a case where a child protection agency is looking for support for the family or the school is recommending services, there might be some resistance. So I try to work with that resistance, but my services really are through a parent. It has to be the initial requester. they might be, ask for these services, but it is through the families. We try to empower families and empower youth to get the services. So going back to the three-year-old, if I'm working with a three-year-old, 2.5 hours, if I'm provided that time, I'm not going to go out for 2.5 hours and sit in a home unless it warrants that. If it's an option, many times in that case, I've had families where I've gone out and the child has a bedtime. The child has structure and has routine. You might have a place, and if they're not available until people come home from work, I certainly would only work around what's going to be appropriate. At times, I might go into a daycare or a preschool or school setting, and my time really should be mostly face-to-face, so I would go in for a meeting, but I'm not always billing for that time. I'm looking more for getting a good picture. I like to say I'm modeling behaviors, I'm helping to normalize the home and school relationship. I'm helping the family to view if it is a more of a severe mental illness, that there is something that's chronic and it's ongoing. It's something that we have to work with ongoing, and I'm there to provide that support.
Okay. Now you had, pardon me, you had mentioned mobile outreach. Now, I have gone on quite a few mobile outreaches from the hospital. Now, is that the same as what you're referring to?
Yeah, mobile outreach is part of the hospital behavioral health.
Right.
That's a separate, I think, crisis intervention, and in that respect, right. That's a separate entity. Mobile response and stabilization services is provided through what we call Tri-County Mobile Response.
Okay.
And that's Somerset, Hunterdon, and Warren.
Warren.
And the number that they would call is 1-877-652-7624. There would be a screener who would answer that call from the family, the caller, and they would refer them, whether it be to the mobile response or to perform care. They would assess that, and then they would go out, if it's mobile response, within an hour time period, or sometimes they have a delayed dispatch, and they would go out and they would do a triage, and they would provide some resources, and also if mobile response goes out, at that point that would be an 8-week stabilization period that they would provide for the family. Now, the family at that point, if they're just in distress and maybe they're having, their youth is not following family rules, or maybe has left the home, or has some, there's been family fighting, then, they will offer that service. I've also had cases where a young child, maybe school age, doesn't want to go to school, and as we look into that further, maybe they become anxious because they're having a difficult time learning. And that's when I go out, and again, I assess what's happening, and I will do, some parenting work as well as work with the youth and help the parent, and then see what's in place for them. And as I said, they might see that as a crisis, but I can help the family see, you have a lot of support. I see the strengths you have. I see, in addition to my going out to the home, the family might call me. In that case, the family did call me, and they were having a difficult time getting their child to school. We talked, we made some strategies, and the child was able to get to school. And again, I like to say, think outside the box, that sometimes it's just a matter of talking with another person and getting an idea, brainstorming, and getting that, I say, positive energy, getting those ideas in place.
Do you find that some of these kids don't want to go to school because they're being bullied?
I have had that situation as well, and hopefully it's something that isn't chronic, that has been going on for a while. I do have a youth right now who has a situation in the school setting, and I've helped his parent to advocate to go in the way to be the fact that you're going to continue to have a relationship with the school, and how I call it a win-win. So we want to try to make someone aware in the schools today, every school in public school in New Jersey, there is a harassment, intimidation, and bullying policy in the school, and there's a format as to how you go about filing a complaint and asking for an investigation. So, again, I would help the family if that's something that they need help with, but I also like to help them, I like to say put them in the driver's seat. I had another parent who had a child who was having a severe anxiety and was having a difficult time getting to school, and they did go into the school, but they were the child was in distress, and the parent wanted to kind of walk with them down into the building, and they were stopped at the door, and they called me, we talked. I helped them to find someone that they could reach out to in the school, because again, if I do that for them, that's a skill that they're lacking, and they need to have that, because again, I will not be in that situation long term. And in that case, the parent did have a good reaction with someone in the district, and you know, we kind of celebrated that success. The other thing I find in working with families and youth, you know, we do go a few steps forward and then we go a few steps back. And that's something, just like we with addiction, we look at relapse prevention. So I try to help them understand that, you know, we do, it's a journey. It's a journey.
And, it's a journey with mental health too. So
yes.
we know that for a fact. quick question. Do you find that, do you have any patients who have autism and that's why they don't, they have problems in school or?
I, in my work, in the school setting, I work very closely with children with autism or mostly on this high, the high functioning in the spectrum. Many of my children have Asperger's that I was very successful and engaged with. I do have one youth right now who I work with who does have, is in a program at the school setting, and this child can build a puzzle with over 300 pieces, is excellent with Legos. Certainly, we find in the autism area, you also run into sensory issues, and what I'd like to say is we have to understand the child, know where they're coming from,
right.
get what's in their head, and we have to understand what they're thinking, and that has always been my challenge and my joy. When I worked with a teacher and talking with her recently, she said, I said something that she remembers, and I said, oh, what was that I said? And she said, it's not about me, it's about the child.
Right.
And sometimes, as parents, as professionals, as teachers, we forget that. And we are so focused on where we want to get someone from A to B, and we forget that there's, especially children in the autism spectrum, there's many variables. One of my family's looking for a dentist right now, and you have to pick and choose your battles as to what you want to focus on. Is it, you know, the toothbrushing? Is it being, you know, getting self-care? What is it that we have to work on? Mm-hmm. And that's, again, celebrate our successes and look for the positives in others.
The reason I brought that up was because, ironically, last night we were watching the end of 60 Minutes, and they had Sesame Street on, and they just now have brought a puppet on Sesame Street with autism, and they're trying to make it that, you know, that it's, you know, that it's not something to point your finger at her and stuff. And I thought it was very interesting, you know, actually. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I brought it up, because I know you have, you know, go into the houses and such. And so I was almost positive you would run in sooner or later to somebody with autism.
Yes.
And, you know.
And I, back to that piece, I did see a little bit of that later in the evening. In my experience in the school setting, we do have a least restrictive environment and children are included. And the children that I worked with are very successful because they grew up together.
Mm-hmm.
And they were accepted, and they were part, and they were included, and their stress were brought
right,
out.
Right.
So, you know, again, that's my experience. But again, with the school setting, many times, if it's the first child in the family starting out, It is very difficult. Sometimes a parent has to come to their own grieving process and their own understanding. I do belong to the 100 County School Counselors. I still participate because I am retired in that field, but I also, I'm a lifelong learner, and we did have a speaker, Brian McGibbon, was a student who just graduated from 100 Central. He and his mother have an organization called My Friend Ryan, and they have, there's a website, and it does share information about autism and the autism spectrum. And I share that. I've used it with my work. I also want to mention, and I know Hunter County has support groups, but I work in Phillipsburg recently, and I attend the County Council for Children.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a very active autism support group that meets up in Phillipsburg at the Early Learning Center, at the Early Learning Childhood Center, and they meet, I believe it's like the second or third Wednesday of the month, and Greenwich School District partners.
Right.
So my piece is try to get out. I'm a big proponent, I believe in counseling, but I also believe that families can be empowered to help each other through the support and the strength and wisdom that they've learned.
Sure. Beverly, I want to back up for a second and just clarify something. So some of the children who you see are not going to school, and some of them are going to school, but they just are having issues, correct? Not every child who you see is out of school full time.
The children that I see are in a school setting.
Yeah, okay, right. School. They're just having issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
I might have a child from time to time who might be out of school because of, example, anxiety. They might be on home instruction, and part of that plan is for a counselor to come into the home.
Okay.
Because they're having difficulty getting into school. But in that respect, I will partner, again, through a release of information, I would always have to have that in place. I would partner with the parent and the school and other agencies to help the child get back into school.
Okay.
And I had a youth who had a baby who was out of school for a short time, and through our myself and other agencies, again, many times you have other agencies, Easter Seals.
Right, who are involved.
We have other kinds of supports, Healthy Families, Northwest PATH, Head Start, Early Head Start. So those programs are there to help families, and we do see success. Mm-hmm. And as I said, if we all work together.
Do you find that a large portion of your clients, quote unquote, have a mental health issue, like bipolar, depression?
I find the mental health issue clearly is there. I see we don't use bipolar as much. We'll say borderline, schizoaffective. We'll talk about, right, when children are little, there's reluctance to diagnose with bipolar disorder, so we'll look at adjustment disorder, we'll look at ADHD, and many times we'll see that ADHD does manifest itself later into something else, but that's part of my intake. When I go out, I will check with the family, is there a history in your family of mental illness? And again, sometimes a family may not be able to articulate that, but then they'll talk as we talk and say, I think I've seen this. Now that I look back on it, my child was anxious. My child, there was someone on the school bus that was giving them a hard time, and I just didn't see it. It was hard for them to get their thoughts down on paper. They had a very hard time with the labels in their clothing, and they had a hard time when there was a loud noise, hitting their ears.
Mm-hmm.
They can start to see it.
Hindsight's 20/20. Yes. Trust me, I know for a fact.
Mm-hmm. And again, but what I have to say there is that you did the best you could with what you had at the time, and now we're going to just move forward. We can't change the past, but we're going to move forward, and that's what we'll say. I have children. When there's one parent in the home, and there are not other supports, I have some family. They have no one that could care for their children if they had an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
They have, they really are not connected to any service. I brought with me, you know, of course, we were just talking, but I like to use books and stories. I am a big proponent of the library, and if I can connect the families to something out there, there are such wonderful stories and resources. This is one story called The Big Mistake, and in this story, you know, this child makes a mistake on the paper. We do have children that are perfectionists, and that causes them their anxiety, you know, which came first. But through that story, showing them that, okay, we put this blob of paint on the paper and we're not happy, but as we look through it, we started to think outside the box, think of possibilities, think of how this little blob becomes a circus in the story. When Emily woke up angry is another story. Just to let children know, certainly, we know anger can certainly be very detrimental, but we all do feel angry at times.
Right.
So we help someone to know that it's okay to be angry, but how do you use that? How do you work with that? I use a scaling. Sometimes I will help the family out, you know, bring a copy of a, whether it's smiley faces, frowns, or numbers, and say, and I think when you introduced the program today, you, with the NAMI group, you said you're helping families know how and what to say to a child. And I think that is a big, important...
Or what not to say.
So I'll say, where are you between 1 and 10? You know, 1 is not really good and 10 is really great. And I will model that for the family when I'm there. Because let's say the child says, I'm a 2, and the parent will say, why are you a 2? And I will work with them to help them, to show them how you can get results. Because it, maybe the child is not talking with the parent, but maybe they'll give a number. So every hour, maybe say, where are you now? What number are you? Help them to observe. I will also see sometimes, even in family members, when they've been away getting some medical treatment, come back home to the house. You know, someone else is in the home, but they'll come back. I see this when they first enter the home, maybe there's this disruption and there's a arguing, and might be they just needed something to eat. So sometimes it's just real simple, and
right.
Sometimes it's very involved. I want to go back to, I use Play-Doh, I use different manipulatives, become body, or, but those are for the little kids, but even some of the big kids will respond to something that's more physical. But we are learning now that we know meditation, we know yoga, and those kinds of things are very helpful. I just did a webinar on trauma, because trauma is, in addition to anxiety, trauma is a big buzzword.
Right.
We have been exposed to trauma in so many ways. And there's a book, it's called The Body Keeps Score. And in that book, it talks about how our body holds this trauma within us. And many times, you're mentioning helping parents know what to say, what not to say. We also help teachers in schools, personnel, know what to say. And one family, I have a child who is very connected to a computer. And if the parent were to just stand there and turn the computer off, there would be an outburst. So we help the family to know where your proximity is. Don't be in someone's personal space. Help them. Make a contract. Write things out. We know children respond to structure and routine. All of us. Those are the things. Again, it's the little things that we continue to work on and celebrate successes.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I don't know if people are clear on is you said that anyone who, a parent, can call this number. So basically it's done, the school is notified that you're there, but it's not something that has to be taken care of at the school, so they can have more leeway at home, correct?
Well, I've had situations where the child was in distress and the school was familiar with the Perform Care or familiar
yep.
with the mobile outreach or some other kind of service, but those services have to be accessed by a parent consent. So the parent will come into the school and sit
right.
with the school, or the school will sit with the parent.
But if a parent, let's say a parent's child is being bullied, they can call you directly, they don't, right? And they can call this number, Tri-County, and ask to have a mobile intensive outreach come and check? Or I just want to make sure I understand the steps.
If there's a bullying situation, I would first think the parent would want to call the school district to make
okay.
them aware.
Let's,
and many times, again, they would investigate and they would
okay.
work on that. But if there might be a situation where the child has some trauma or has some other residual effects that would need to be addressed, that could be the school system also, when they do investigate the bullying, they mm-hmm. might recommend the child get some school counseling or get some,
okay.
I like to say psychoeducation,
mm-hmm.
Because counseling is also teaching,
mm-hmm.
and you're helping someone to, like, what is anxiety? What is that? Is that something, we help them understand what it is, how do I work with it, what is ADHD? Same with medication. Some of our youth might take medication, and I'll also, let them know that, maybe I'm hyper today because I didn't have my medication, but also you have skills. In that respect, we have medication, we have counseling, and we have education. We have those three components that work together.
But what I wanted to go back to is I got the impression you said parents can call this Tri-County number. What would be reasons why parents would call this number directly?
They would call if there was an escalation of some kind of behavior that
okay.
they were concerned for their child. It could be, the mobile person is a screener and they're trained to assess, and if it's something that they would come out, or they could provide some verbal support, or they would also provide some resources. So that is one level. With the mobile response. Now, because I'll go back to that, the mobile response stabilization would provide that 8-week, and occasionally they might provide a 12-week, a 1-month extension, if knowing that the family is connected to outpatient services, and maybe like my youth is just about to finish the school year. So I feel like the interventions I have in place, helping them get to school, helping the parent get connected to the after-school homework club and interacting in the home, maybe setting a family meeting in the home to help them to model that. They may give me the extra month and say, right, you can do that, and knowing the family's going to be going out. There may be a situation where it warrants that this is going to be more than just an 8-week period. This child does have some significant issues that require more than just the mobile response. So then we would move to the CMO, the care management organization, and I would make a referral. My case manager would refer, and then that would be submitted to the Reform Care and for their consideration. Reform Care, just like any other agency, they are followed by a certain protocol, and they know how to assess a referral, and they would say, well, I think based on what you've given notes to, that doesn't warrant our level of care. You need to try, have a school do some more things, have a parent go to outpatient, or they might say, yes, we feel that would warrant to have more services. So at that point, it would go to the care management organization, and then that care manager would reach out to my agencies and say, we are requesting the services of a counselor for, a 5-year-old female, 15-year-old female with these situations. And then we would staff it. And at that point, there would be a child family team meeting, there would be an agreement for services, and then they would develop an individual service plan, and services would be done.
And as far as you know, these services are provided free through Medicaid flex funds or other...
That's my understanding.
Okay.
I don't directly bill for services.
Okay.
My agencies do.
Okay.
And most of the children do have a Medicaid number, or there's something that's coordinated between their family insurance.
So
I definitely don't get involved in that. But when I do have agreements that go out to families, I am letting them know that the services are provided free.
Okay. But if someone is not on Medicaid, I mean, you're talking about a certain income level for Medicaid. If someone is middle class or whatever, they don't qualify for Medicaid. Do you know if there's a charge for this? Or
if the service is warranted, the initial first line mobile response it could be high income. Mm-hmm. I go to all areas of the county, every yard in Huntington counties, and mm-hmm. I go to all kinds of homes,
right?
And I don't get involved in that part, but they all are provided.
Okay, I'm very curious about what you can do with teenagers, and because they're just going through such a rough period. I've been through it with my own. Are the parents usually involved in the action plan, or do you do it with the teenager? Because a lot of times the big disconnect is the child and the parent.
I develop a plan of care or a treatment plan mm-hmm. that does get signed off by the parent. And mm-hmm. if the youth is 14 years and older, that's our threshold in New Jersey, they would also sign off. And they are part of that plan to reduce anxiety, to transition back to school, to develop a home and school routine. Those are some examples. But the parents certainly would sign off on that. And when I work with my youth, for example, recently one child was resistant to services because it was pretty much enforced through a child protection agency. So the family did want to have services because they certainly wanted to keep their child with them. And this child said to me, you're a random person.
A random person?
I'm a random person. I'm coming into a home, and I'm a random person. But by the time the 8-week period was up, I wasn't a random person anymore. And I felt pride in that because I have to hear what the child's saying.
You connected.
Another child in the home, there were other children, and they were having an argument when I was in the home, and the child said to the other child, "You don't know my life." And that was very profound. That mm-hmm. was very profound. And I used that in my work with that child. That child was not able to sit down and just sit and talk because that child had experienced a lot of trauma. So we went outside. We throw the football. I'm a very active person myself, so it works.
It's not just and little picture books. You're here. You do football.
I walk. One time we started to make a garden with a child. And she'd come back. Participated in.
That's really interesting. So you'll go for walks then with a teenager, maybe? You could take them for a...
Yeah. Yeah. I just, as I said, to me that's very profound. And that child, I did make some change. And then there was, and the other child, as I said, music. Tell me what kind of music you like.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you could go on to your my phone, and I can look up a music. Gym Class Hero was a certain group someone mentioned recently, and one of Simon and Garfunkel, that Simon's my old friend.
Uh-huh.
Green Day on the Boulevard is a very popular song. I walk along the Boulevard, very, very lonely, sad. So I can hear, we read the words, we look at what's going on. That's how someone relates. I use art, expressive arts. Children might not be able to talk, but they can draw and they can share, what is part of their world. I try to get away from as much technology. I'll let a child show me, I'm working on this computer game, but I find that the children can get too engaged in that and then not.
Really?
to break away, and that's something I think our whole society is going to be working on. And there are games years ago I used to do. There was a Brian Friedlander who does technology, and he's a psychologist, and he wrote a book, Emotionally Intelligent Parenting, with Dr. Elias and Dr. Tobias. And he was very a proponent of using some technology in his work with children and counseling. So again, I'm an eclectic person when I work with families, but I try to get a sense of what's happening with them, and then I kind of, from there, I pick and choose some resources that might work for that family. So it takes me a lot of work to put things together, but I just don't go to a house with a folder, just sit down.
It's not cookie cutter at all.
No, not at all. No, and I think that's what I enjoy.
Pretty interesting. Right.
You said you had clients, patients who were 3 years old and such. I remember I gave a talk one time to doctors and nurses, and afterwards a couple doctors come up to me from different practices, and they each said to me they had 3-year-olds who attempted suicide. And I, what? I said, 3 years old? They said, yeah, they didn't really realize what suicide was, but they were attempting to do harm to themselves, you know, to stop the hurt that they felt. And I'm saying, 3 years old? Mm-hmm. Now, you had 3 years old patients, you said. What was their issues?
Well, some of it was behavior, not, you know, going their own way.
Right.
The parent needing help with caring, the child being physically aggressive in some respects. Sometimes the daycare or the nursery school will find, you know, the child's hitting or kicking or having some behavior issues, and so we'll, you know, they'll suggest the parent reach out and then try to get some support. If the child is not in their home of origin, they might be in resource home, mm-hmm. foster care. And the agency in our state, you know, their mission is to keep families together. So if the child has been, in a sense, removed from the home, there is a period of trying to reunite families, so right. There is family visitation, and perhaps my child that I'm working with might be going to a family visit and then leaving that visit crying and becoming upset. So then I'll try to help the family to develop ways to help to calm the child, or help the child to calm and help them to be able to in their 3-year-old
right.
life be
right.
able to make some sense of their life and respect. I haven't run across the children with the sadness that wanted to harm or hurt themselves, but certainly I'm sure that that is out there as well. We want to make sure that people have, you know, are properly identified, are properly cared for and managed. We also find things like high iron levels. We find Lyme disease. You know, other, you know, I'm not ruling some of those areas out, you know, for families as well. Exposure, we know exposure to violence and exposure to that, whether it be in a home setting or in the media. Certainly, children don't have that ability to make judgments or even know, like jump, like the Superman jumping off of out of a window. You know, that's something that we have to help children to understand.
Right.
Inside their repertoire of life skills.
What do you do if you come to a home and you feel that the parent is I'm not saying that they're necessarily hitting the child, but they're, I'm going to say, maybe borderline verbally abusive, or they're constantly putting the child down and just not really supporting that child. How, so you're really helping the parent too, or how do you deal with that?
Well, that's a fine line. Mm-hmm. That has occurred, and that does occur.
Mm-hmm.
When I go out to do my intake, mm-hmm. when I have to disclose to a family, and by law I am mandated, and anyone's mandated, if I observe abuse, I must report that.
Mm-hmm.
If that were to be the case, I certainly would talk with my family and make them aware of my concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, that's part of that relationship. But I, again, in my work, I attend many trainings and seminars, and there's the adverse childhood effects survey, and that was put out. It was put out by one of the academies, and I got a copy of that. There was a spanking study as part of that, because in New Jersey, families do spank children, and it's not against the law, but if you are spanking a child with a closed fist with certain ways, certainly that is abuse, or if there's a mark and there certainly is something there. And so I brought that spanking study, and I shared that with my family, and we talked about ways to help families. I do go to trainings with Department of Children and Families, and there's a training called the Nurtured Heart Approach. And the Nurtured Heart Approach is being used or taught in the group homes that we have in our state. It's being taught in some of our detention centers to help with youth. And it's, again, as Larry said, it's a way of talking. So I'll model something, say, I like how you did whatever it was, and yeah. I like how you stayed on your mat. I might have yoga mats that cut into squares, so we'll practice sitting on a square. Well, I'll use my timer, and we'll practice with the little ones staying focused for 5 minutes or so on. And I'll model that, and then we'll you know, let the parents see. In that respect, if the parent is that frustrated, I might just, I bring many materials with me.
I was going to say, you must have a huge bag that you drag in, or at least that's in your car, because I'm looking at what you have here, and then you're talking about yoga mats.
For the children to work on, so yeah. I can chat with the family. Sometimes it's just, mom needs, or dad, or someone needs someone to talk to. They haven't had that opportunity. And I do what I can, as I said, because that does come in place. I do have a youth who, every time I come, there's always negatives being presented, and I will do what I can to help to present positives, or to help to say, they didn't do their clean their bedroom, or they didn't do their chores. Let's see how we can work that. Or a case I came out to a home, and there was a big fight when I came in about the child wasn't sleeping the floor the way their parent wanted to be done. So you want the floor swept. Maybe can they try their way, and you have your way. Let's see if we can accomplish it. So we call them in there. I know Larry's smiling here.
Why? Because it reminds me of a woman a few years back who came to a support group. And the time she came, her son was in high school and wouldn't go to school and all that. And so after a period of time, he went back to school and he got a part-time job, and he was in his senior year. He was, B average, and, And she came to the support group and says, "He doesn't clean his room. He doesn't clean anything in his room. Clothes all over the place. What shall I do?" I says, "Shut the door and don't look in." And she says, "What?" I says, 6 months ago, he wasn't in school. He was almost on the verge of going to jail. And now he's got a job, and he's a B average, and he's a senior. And you're worrying about his room? Close the door. I mean, who cares? I mean, is it that, if it's that bothering you that much, go in and clean it up. If not, close the door. Well, I never saw her again. She refused to come back.
That wasn't the answer she was hoping for.
That's probably not the answer she was hoping for, but I couldn't understand. You should be joyful that your loved one has accomplished this in a short period of time, and you're worrying about some stupid clothes on the floor. I mean, I don't get the connection personally. Of course, I'm not a woman, and,
maybe we need to go and talk to someone. Of course, that's hard for some people, but really, where is the problem? And let's focus there. But that does happen, and I try my best to help out with that. Sometimes I will, with HIPAA, we don't text. Like we might text to make an appointment, but we don't text counseling issues. And a parent will kind of cross that boundary or will cross, and I will. One time I just printed up the text and I said, "This is what you said." said, you know, is this really what you meant? And, you know, really help someone and, you know, try to bring a sense of humor. But to be a parent today, to be a caregiver, you know, we have to take care of ourselves.
That's right.
And we have to
be... You have to take care of yourself so you can't take care of your others, you know.
Yes. And I think I wrote that here. I mean, I do everything I can to use services. To go back to the library again, they have such wonderful supports. They have music programs. They have Tai Chi. They have yoga. Mm-hmm. They have all kinds of services and supports. And, you know, as one of my good counseling friends said, we're only as good as, you know, we are. And I can only take my client or youth to where I am. But I have to say, when I work with my youth and my families, I really learn a lot. And I certainly can't share information with other families, but I might say, oh, I'm working with someone who is trying to get to, what advice would you give them? And they feel, and sometimes I see a certain way someone's tried something, and it really does, you know, and it really helps. I had a youth who, again, it's a lot, it's because you have a youth who goes to in-home counseling, they have an advocate, they have another worker, they have so many things, plus they want to be a kid. So we have to mix it up and make it fun for them as well.
Beverly, is there any way somebody could get, you know, like an email or a YouTube or whatever website or whatever that they could get information from?
About this service.
About the services?
What's the best way to?
What would be the best way?
I would just say if they went on to performcare.org.
Okay,
that's performcare.org.
Performcare.org.
And that would provide them information about services.
Okay.
For you. And they have many resources. There's also, I think we know, the Mom to Mom.
Right.
Is a hotline in New Jersey. There's the Second Floor website, which is for youth in crisis, but it's, again, a very good website for families.
Okay, is that written out, Second Floor?
Second. It's 2ND.
2ND floor.
Floor.
Yeah, secondfloor.org. If you would just go into your county, every county has a national health planner.
Right.
And you have resources. In addition to my work, I also do the disaster response, crisis counseling, and also hospice volunteer. So I find,
right,
interacting. And the more I go out, I learn about resources. I was at a child council, and there was someone there that does services for postpartum depression.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the more you go out, the more you learn about what resources are available.
I had Governess Cody, wife on the radio,
yes,
here, and she talked about postpartum depression.
Her organization funds those counselors.
Right. Mm-hmm. Beverly, I can't thank you enough for coming. It has been very informative, and
very,
I really appreciate all the work
you
that you do. And if NAMI can help you in any way, please feel free.
Well, I bring your number with me, and I bring the materials, and I do have had some families be very successful.
Well, like I said, if we can help you in any way, you know.
It's all about sharing work.
It is.
That's right.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio?